Okay, so we're in Memvav tonight. Let me go back to the Mishnah on Memhamid Beis. We're around eight lines above where it gets wide, page 90, 45b, Memhamid Beis. So Manitin, Kiro Balab Moseira, it's talking about a Shur Muad. If the owner ties it with a leash, or he locks the door appropriately, the and then the animal goes out and injures someone. Echad tam echad muad chayav divrei meir. According to Meir, whether it's a short tam or short muad, says in muad before. With short tam or short muad, you're chayav. Meaning, this Rashi explains he's talking about shmirah pechuta, like a minimal shmirah he does. In other words, he closed the door, with a rope or whatever. But and it puts and Rashi says, look at Rashi and shmirah pechuta delat sheichol lamo mitsuya. He can withstand like a normal wind, or he has the leash. Rabbi Huda Meir. Tam chayav patur. The Tan, this we discussed Rabbi Yehuda last week. Tan Rabbi Yehuda says if it's a short tam, he's chayav with the shmir pluta, but somewhat counterintuitively, if it's a short muad, he's off the hook. In other words, if the short muad gets out and he did a shmirah pluta, he's not liable for any damage from the short muad. Although remember we learned one shita that short muad had like. Part of it was short tam, so he might be have a chayvus for that. Shemor v'lo yishmeru b'alav v'shamur huzeh. In other words, the Torah says, and the owners don't guard it, but it is guarded. Reb Lezer Omer, ain lo shmir l'sakin. Reb Lezer says, there's no shmir, the shmir is sakin. You shech the animal, that's the shmir. There is no way to do shmir. Let's do Rashi on this. Look at the Rashi of l'sakin. Even if he does a superior shemira, he peel hakotel. Nevertheless, somehow the animal like knocks over the wall. Biatsa chayav. B'shloshma chol kopa davar. So Rashi says there are three opinions here. Reb Meir b'shmir pechuta chayav mula patur. According to Reb Meir, shmir pechuta doesn't cut it with shor muad. In other words, with shor muad, shmir pechuta doesn't cut it, but shmir mula would do it. In other words, according to Reb Meir, it was if he has shmir mula. That would get him off the hook. According to the Tanna, even Shmir Chutz is adequate. According to Blazer, even Shmir Meula, he's Chayev. In other words, even the best Shmir you do, you're Chayev. So the only way to get it out of the liability is to shack the animal. All right, let's see Mem Vav and Aleph, the second line now. So Reb Blazer Omer, right.
So you as the victim, how does one know that sure is
Yeah, so
those?
yeah, so the I think that's a good svara that you said. I mean, Warren learns it out from Pasuk, but I think it's a good svara that you said. I think I had seen that, maybe I mentioned it to you earlier last week. The way you would be is like there's a whole testimony in court that takes place. So presumably it gets publicized. That's the only way. That's the only way you would know is shor muad. I don't know what else to say. All right, let's see back on the Gemara. So on the second line on Mem Vav and Aleph, Reb Lezer Omer ein lo shmirah l'sakin chuli. So Tana Reb Lezer says there is no shmirah unless you shech the animal. In other words, the only good muad is a dead muad, so to speak. So Amar Rabba, my time with Reb Lezer. What's the reason that Reb Lezer says what he says? The Amar Kra v'lo yishmerenu shuvin lo shmirah l'zeh. So the way we think that the Tana Reb Lezer learns the pasuk. In other words, up until now, with the way we understood the pasuk within Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda is that the person doesn't guard it adequately. In other words, bim shonagachu mimol balav. In other words, that he doesn't guard it properly. But here, the way the Gemara says v'lo is that the Torah is saying there is no way to shmirah. And it's not susceptible to shmirah. In other words, below Yishmerenu. In other words, it can't be guarded. That's what we think. He says, Amar le Abaye, so Abaye says to Rabba, and Abaye was Rabba's nephew, and his Talmud, Elamiyata d'chi below Yichasenu, Nami shuv ein lo kisui l'zeh. So this is talking about the bore. So it says, if a person, O kiyachre ish bore below Yichasenu, if a person digs a bore and he doesn't cover it, so does that mean there's no kisui? In other words, there's no adequate covering for it. In other words, to absolve you of liability. Is that what you're going to say? So, in other words, William Shmerenu, there is no shmir. That's what you want to say. The Torah is telling you that there is not susceptible to shmira. So b'lichasenu, it's not susceptible to kisui. In other words, any kisui you do with the boar would not be an adequate kisui. That's what we're saying. Is that b'chitei mahakanami? You say takia. Yeah, that's the way it is. Batzan. But we learn in the mission later on our masechta. Kisau karaui. If a person covered the boar appropriately, this would be lachor boar b'shuda rabim. The boar and b'shuda rabim. Then I follow toko shor o kamor. And nevertheless, Oshor Hamor fell into it. He did everything he should have done. He says, Umate, and the Shor of Hamor died, Patur. So the owner is Patur. So the fact that the Torah says, Lo Yishmerenu, we don't think that can mean that it's not susceptible to Shmira. So Ella Amar Abaye, sort of Abaye says, you see, Ella means like Sold from Shad, Ella Amar Abaye, Haido Tabaz Rav Lezer, Kiditani. The reason Rav Lezer is like to learn the Braisa, and we'll see in a minute. How do we know that a person shouldn't raise like a vicious dog in his house? A person shouldn't have a rickety ladder around his house. Shouldn't create like a dangerous instrumentality. So the way that the Gemara is understanding Pasuk now, let's look at Rashi in the second wide line in Rashi. So the Gemara, it revises understanding when it says loy shmerenu means that a person shouldn't keep loy shmerenu. You shouldn't keep the shore around. In other words, loy shmerenu, don't keep a shore muad around. That's the way the Gemara understands. Right. In other words, right. Don't keep that shore muad around. Just like in other words, just like we see by the tel of ra, you shouldn't keep the tel of ra. You shouldn't keep the sum ra'ua. So too, you shouldn't keep the shore muad around. Now, the only question is, once I have this pasuk, lotasim damim beitecha, you shouldn't keep like a dangerous instrumentality around the house. So why do I need now the pasuk, lo yishmerenu? I have lotasim damim beitecha. So the Rabbeinu Peretz, and Rabbi Liebowitz was quoted this today as well, but the Rabbeinu Peretz I saw in Besipta, he says that it means that, in other words, there's different levels of danger. So the tel of ra and the sumer u are very dangerous. That's what Torah is saying. So the shor muad, it's dangerous, but not as dangerous as the tel of ra and the sumer u. So therefore, yeah. So Reb Lezer is darshan at the pasuk below yishmerenu that the Torah is telling you that don't keep the shor muad in your property. Don't keep him around. And the others understand, no, Lo Yishmerenu, it is capable of guarding it, but you, if you don't guard it properly, then you'll be liable. That's the way that's going. All right, let me say a few things from some sheets, and then we'll see where we go, okay? So, yeah, we have a whole cover now. All right, one second. Just, wait. Just give me one second. All right, so first, we're going to do this is the Al Hadaf by Reb Zev Dickstein. Today's stuff, right? Or bump up today, right? Yeah. So Rabbeinu and Rabbi Yehuda Membab. Rabbeinu and Rabbi Yehuda differs the necessary measures regarding a muad. They agreed if the required measures were taken, the ox nevertheless managed to break loose and cause damage, the owner is exempt from paying for its damages. So according to Rabbeinu and Rabbi Yehuda, there is a way to guard the shor muad, and if I do all the things that are necessary, then I'm off the hook. Reb Lezer disagrees with the Rabbanan, i.e. Rameir and Rabbi Huda, maintains that there is no secure means of guarding a muad. The only guaranteed technique to prevent it from causing damage is having a sword. Abaye Membab and Malik says that Reb Lezer's assertion is based on Rabbi Natan, who drives from the Pasuk, Tassim Dimi Beitecha, you shall not maintain blood, i.e. hazardous items in your house, that is forbidden for a person to raise a wild dog or maintain an unsteady ladder in his home. The consensus among the Rishonim is that the Rabbanan agree with Rabbi Natan that it is forbidden to maintain a wild dog or hazardous items in one's house. Rishonim, however, have divergent views as to the point of contention between Reb Lezer and Rabbanan. So I explained it one way, and now we'll see how he explains it here. Now, according to Rabbeinu Peretz, their dispute centers on whether a muad ox is comparable to a wild dog. Reb Lezer requires one to slaughter his muad ox because Rabbi Natan says it's forbidden to maintain a wild dog in one's house. Rabbanan disagree and do not obligate one to slaughter his muad ox because, in their opinion, a muad ox is more manageable than a wild dog and can be restrained and properly guarded. We spoke that out so far. According to this approach, Reb Lezer is saying that one has a moral obligation to slaughter his muad ox to ensure that it never injures anyone. However, if one failed to do so, Reb Lezer did not say he's obligated to pay for damages. Reb Lezer agrees that if one tied up his ox instead of slaughtering it, and it managed to escape and cause damage, the owner is not financially responsible. This is also the opinion of Tosfos and Mem Vav Aleph, Dibur Matil El, the second approach. Now, B, the Muki Yosef, an explanation of the Rif's position, does not distinguish between a wild ox and a wild dog, is of the opinion that one is morally obligated to slaughter his muad ox. He says that even the Rabbanan agree that one is supposed to slaughter his muad ox, as Rabbi Natan derives from the Pasuk Tasim Debi Beitecha. The dispute between Reb Lezer and the Rabbanan centers on whether failure to slaughter one's muad ox translates into a financial obligation to pay for its damages. Reb Lezer is of the opinion that regardless of the owner's efforts to guard his muad ox, he's obligated to pay for its damages since he failed to slaughter it, as Rabbi Natan requires. The halacha follows the Rabbanan, who maintain that although one is morally obligated to slaughter his muad ox, he's not obligated to pay for its damages if he made an effort to guard it. He locked it up in a barn, which comes since from woods. This also seems to be the opinion of Rashi. Rashi, Dibur Mechshali Gadol, explains that Reb Lezer interprets the Pasuk below Yishmeru Balav as meaning Lo Yikaimenu, may not maintain his muad ox. The Pnei Yeshu explains that Rashi means, cite this Pasuk as a scriptural source for Blaz's assertion that the owner is obligated to pay if he failed to slaughter his muad ox, as the Pasuk includes Shalem Yishalem Gomer, he must pay for its damages, implying that if the owner maintained his muad ox, failed to slaughter, he must pay for its damages. So, one second. So it seems like the way he's saying it here is Machloke. If the person did not slaughter the ox, according to Reb Lezer, is he now absolutely liable for anything the ox does, according to Reb Lezer? Or would even Reb Lezer say there's a way that he could guard it in a way to avoid financial culpability? So the first approach, he said, that Reb Lezer holds that you have a moral obligation to slaughter it, but if you didn't slaughter it and you guarded it, then you're off the hook. According to the second approach, then the only way to do this is to slaughter it, and that's the way that's going. Okay, give me just one more second or two, and then we'll see where we go with this. One second. Okay, I think we're good for now. Okay, who's got questions, comments, thoughts on anything we did so far? What? If you have a question, we'll take it up right now. Okay. All right. Anybody in the Zoom world want to say anything? All right. Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. Hadron Lach Shoshanagakar Baba Kamisha Yeshkoa to all of you. You completed four prakim in the second Baba Kama. And as we know, there are 10 prakim. 10 prakim in Baba Kama, 10 prakim in Baba Metzia, 10 prakim in Baba Batra. And we're not quite halfway through the Masechta, but approaching the halfway mark would be Nun Hey or so, but we're getting close to it. Somebody was mentioning it to me today that he was saying, like, you're almost halfway through. All right, let's take a look at the next Mishnah. Shor Shenagach, we had this Mishnah already. Shor Shenagach at a para, Nimsa Ubarah Betzida. So it's talking about a short tom. A short tom gored a para. Para is a cow. He says, V'nimsa Ubarah Betzida. We find it's like dead fetus on. In other words, at some point, the pregnant cow gave birth to, you know, a stillborn offspring. So Shor Shenagach at a para, V'nimsa Ubarah Betzida. But in Yadua, Imach Lo Nacha Yalda. We don't know if it miscarried before it was gored, in which case the goring's got nothing to do with the miscarriage, imishanakla yalda, or if it took place after it was gored, in which case we're going to attribute the miscarriage to the shore. So mashalim chatsi nezik lapara, rubi nezik lablad. So the Tana of the Mishnah says that the owner of the shore, in other words, of the goring shore, he's going to have, for the para yos chatsi nezik, it's a short tab. So the para is worth X number of dollars, so whatever was lost, the damage, he owes chatsi nezek for that. But with the ubar, so if he'd be liable for the ubar, he owes 50%. We don't know if he's liable for the ubar. So we're going to say, like, we're going to do a rubia nezek, a quarter of a nezek. In other words, it's safek whether he's chayiv or not. So we're going to do a quarter of a nezek. Now, Rabbi Leibowitz mentioned today that the Meiri says that there were edim that saw from a distance the shore goring the para, because otherwise it gets difficult when the people come forward to make their tainis. So because he was saying that, you know, it's like we hold that chatsi nezek is a knas. So if the Balaam come in and say Moda Bagnas is Patur, so he's saying that there are Edom that's the remain according to the Eri, the Edom see it from a distance, but they can't see, they didn't see whether it miscarried or whatever. All right, now the second case in the Mishnah, Bechin Para Shana Chadashor, he's flipping it over. Here the para gores the shore. He says, Vinimsa Vlada. And now here it doesn't say it's like a stillborn child, it's Vlada. In other words, a live calf is on the side of the para. The para gave birth. We don't know if it gave birth before it gored, Mishnachayalda, or if it gave birth after it gored. Now here the issue is going to be, again, with a short time, you look for gufo, you look for the guf of the animal. So the issue is, if I'm the injured party, can I look to the calf also to get compensated? So, and here we have a line in the Gemara, the Mishnah, which we don't understand, but I'll explain it according to the Maskana of the Gemara. So the injured party in this case is the Baal Shor. So the Nizak is going to get Chatzi Nezek from the Para. He says Revi'a Nezek min Avlad, a quarter Nezek from the Avlad. That's what let's okay now. Okay, so the so it sounds like you're getting 3/4 compensation, but the Gemara is going to explain it means if the Para is here. And you can then you'll collect Chatzi Nezek from the para. In other words, then that'll cover it. But if the para is not around, we don't know what happened to the para. Then you can collect up to a quarter Nezek from the vlad. It's not clear whether the vlad is liable, from the gufo for this incident. So it's like mamon avuta b'safek chokin. In other words, it's money which is in safek, so we're going to divide the money in the middle. So if we would know that the vlad was liable, was part of the para when it gored. So then you chatzin essay from the blood would also work. We don't know that's the case. So it might be liable, not be liable. So we're going to cut the in one half. In other words, normally it'd be one half. We do one half to one half. It's mamon mutab b'safek cholkin. In other words, mamon is b'safek, and we don't know whether it belongs to the mazik or the nizak. So we're going to split it. We're going to say 1/4. Okay, that's according to the maskan of the Gemara. All right, one second. Let me see if anything I want to do here. Okay, no, let me just do. We'll do a little bit of Rabbi Nezek and the Rashi, the third narrow line. This is going on the first case in the Mishnah. First case is where the injured party was the para and maybe it's vlad. Rabbi Nezek. So the tam chayav chatzin Nezek, b'hai vlad muta b'safek hu b'cholken. So the vlad is b'safek, so we cholek with that. All right, now time for questions, comments, and thoughts. Go ahead.
Second case. First case is clear. Second case. Paras works.
$1,000. And let's say the injury that was done, we'll say was, let's say, $400 injury. $400 injury. So now I want to recover my damages. So if the para is around, so I can collect up to, in other words, so in my 200, so I have the para I'm taking care of. Let's say the para is not around. Only the vlad is around. Let's say the vlad is worth total. Let's say the vlad total is worth 400, and so chatzin would be 200 from the vlad, but of the 200, that's mamon amut habasafek. So I'm only entitled to recover half. It would be 100 from the one
What was
quarter.
Fern's question?
Okay, one second. We'll come to you. You understand or not? Okay. So again, she wanted me to explain the case in the Mishnah. When you get revia or the second case in the Mishnah is where the cow that is or was pregnant gores the ox. So we said you can get a half from the mother and a quarter from the offspring. So the way the Gemara is going to explain, we don't know this yet. The Gemara is going to explain that if the mother cow is there, so you're entitled to chatzin nezek from the mother. But if the mother cow is not around, this is Rava's explanation. So you can get up to a quarter from the vlad, from the ubar, from the offspring. All right? Right. So then I would think you could get contribution up to half. Then I would think. Okay. All right. Everybody good? All right. All right. Okay. Let's go further in the Gemara. Okay. So now we're 8 lines from the bottom. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Yudah Mar Shmuel." So Rabbi Yehuda says the name Shmuel, Zu Debrei Sumchus. He says our Mishnah reflects the opinion of Sumchus. He says the Amar Mamon Umu Tabasafik Holkin. He Sumchus hold. You have Mamon, which is a Vesita Safek, so you divide it down the middle. It means that, in other words, everybody agrees that is Chatzi Nezek for the Tam. That's the Dabar Pashut. The key is the Vlad. In other words, the offspring is the wild card in the Mishnah. So when the Vlad is one of the injured parties or may have been killed, whatever, now the owner of the Vlad wants to recuperate damages, so it's not clear whether that is compensable or not. That's Mamon Umu Tabasafek, and they're going to be Cholek. Or the second case is like the blood may be implicated in the damage, and the same thing with Safek. About Chachamim Omrim, Zeh Klal Gadol B'Din. The Chachamim say this is an important principle in damages. Hamotzi Mechaber Olav Araya, that the person, the plaintiff, has to prove his case. So the Chachamim would say, in the first case where Shur Shem Gachra Para, so. If you, in other words, you're the plaintiff, you have to prove the shor damaged the blood, if you can, or damaged the ubar. If you can't prove that, then too bad, so sad. And the same thing with the second case as well, where the plaintiff says, your blood was part of the cow at the time today. You have to prove it, and you can't prove it, you're out of gas. Now the Gemara now diverts slightly here to so the Gemara says. Why does the Gemara have to introduce like a preamble to the Shita of the Chachamim? Just say the Chachamim say, why do you have to say Zek Klal Gadol B'Din? This is an important principle. What's that all about? So he says, Itzri. So the Gemara says it's necessary to say that the Filu Nizak Omer Bari, even if the Nizak, the injured party, said, I'm 100% sure this is what happened. I was there. I saw the whole thing. He says, Umazik Omer Shema. And the Mazik says, I don't know, I wasn't there, but maybe it happened this way. He says, Hamotzi Mechaber Olav Araya. Nevertheless, according to the Chachamim, we're still going to say Hamotzi Mechaber Olav Araya. In other words, it's nice that you say you were there and you saw the whole thing, but you're just flapping your lips or your gums. It's not doing anything. You have to bring Edom to support the whole situation. Okay? Now,
guess the Shema.
I don't understand the question. Repeat. Right. So here, everybody agrees this is a Safek case. Well, everybody, it's a Safek case. So Sumcha says we're going to be Cholek, and come and say amongst Mechaber Lavaraya. Okay, now let's see back in the Gemara. Now, the Gemara says, Inami l'chihad de'itmar, or else, now we're going to like, diverging a little bit. There was the Chachamim saying, Zeh Klal Gadol B'Din, Hamotzi Mechaber Olav Araya, Zeh Klal Gadol B'Din is referring, alluding to a different halakha that we're going to learn right now, and we must be patient for a little bit till we get the answer. Inami Lachi Ha De'Itbar, Hamocher Shor L'Chaveiro, they were alluding to the case where Reuven sells his shor to Shimon, the Nimsanakan, and then, and so in other words, they have a done deal. Shimon pays for it, and then it turns out that the shor that he bought was a nachan, a goring shor, and he bought it, he wanted it for plowing. So if it's a goring shor, it's not the greatest, it's goring and plowing with it. So it's not fit for his use. Rav Amar Harisa Mekach Taot. Rav says it's a Mekach Taot. He says, Shmuel says that the seller could say, I sold it to you intending it for shechita purposes. Let's look at Rashi on this. 8 lines from the bottom in Rashi. Inami l'chiyahab diachol amar l'shchita mechartiv lach bi'apogav de'iklanim or zil bat haruba. Even though we could say we should follow the rov, the ruba l'ravi kazavni, most of the shvarim are purchased for plowing. B'habemekach taot. In other words, I would think I should follow the rov. So most of the shvarim are sold for plowing. So the mekach taot like Rav. Ashminu manitin the whole benakit moker demay. So the Mishnah, where he, or the, I think he means it's really. He says, Ashminu. So since the seller is holding the money, the seller has the money, the purchaser is most mechaber labaraya. So he says manitin, whatever this, in other words, he's referring to the statement of the Chachamim. So the statement of the Chachamim Was that, would you, let me just look at Lemonhead. Was that in a mission here? One second, let me just take a quick look. Yeah, he refers to as Matnitin, but he means the same in the Chachamim saying in Moshe Mirkabel Raya. So it means, even though there's an argument to say that the rove would be this way, the rove would be that he's purchasing it for plowing purposes. Nevertheless, if the seller already has the money, so within the way Shmuel understands it, Shmuel says in Moshe Mirkabel Raya, that's what Shmuel says. So when they said the way Shmuel understand it, when it says and we follow we pass like Shmuel be Mamonot, so that when it said Zek Klal Gadol Bedin, Moshe Mirkabel Raya is alluding to this case, which we're going to dissect a little further. Now those three lines from the bottom. Right, that's true. Now, he says, so the Gemara says, Amai, so the Gemara says, the Gemara assumes he's talking about a person, he's like not a one-time purchaser, he's a regular guy, he farmer or whatever, he purchases on a regular basis. Why don't we see the, like he's a person who always buys for plowing? No, then it's plowing, that's the deal. And if he's a person who buys for shechita, that shechita is the deal. Lo sricha begabrin desabin lahalahas. Look at all the cases. Sometimes he buys for plowing. Sometimes he buys for shechita. The next say idemei radya the radya idemei next to the nista. The Gemara says, why don't we just see what the purchase price was? So the Gemara assumes that buying an ox for plowing is much more expensive than buying an ox for meat. So if the sales price was $1,000. That proves it was for plowing, and then the oxen doesn't work out. If the sales price was 500, that proves it was for meat, and then that's a done deal. So lo tzricha to okir bistra b'kayvet me radya. Now the case is that the price of meat, skyrocketed up, and now the price of meat is the same as the price for plowing. So now, okay, so again, let's focus for a second. So we hooked into this because we quoted Rabbi Yehuda Shmuel that the Chacham say Zeh Klal Gadol B'Din, the Moshe Mirkabel Raya. So he said, why is Zeh Klal Gadol B'Din? So one Klal Gadol B'Din related to our case, that even if the Nizak would say Bari and the Mazik says Shema, they're still going with it. But here the Gemara says we're alluding to this case where you had a sale. Now, it comes out, according to Rav, it's Mechach Taot, so we'll give the money back, he gives the shore back. According to Shmuel, it's tough luck. You have to prove your case, can't prove your case, you're on your own. So now Amri, they send the base managers to turn the page, top line of the days. The elect Lishkalei. So if let's say the seller doesn't have the money anymore, he doesn't have money to pay him back. Now some of the girsa that he has the same money, like there's another girsa in the Gemara, but the way ours is he doesn't have money to pay him back, so then the buyer would have to keep the shore. In other words, the shore, we said the price of meat and the price of the plowing animal is the same, right? In other words, the price, in other words, the price would be the same. So if the seller doesn't have the money to refund to the buyer, according to Rav, so then the buyer, Rav says a mechatal. Mechatal means you give me the money back, I give you the shore back. But let's say this, so he says if you elect the Torah, bezuzeh. The Amri Inshi Mimari Rash V'tach Para Yiparav, because people say, like from a person you're trying to collect money from, even if you collect brand, do it. In other words, you take whatever you can. But if that's the case, that would work out that there's really no difference between Rav and Shmuel, right? Shmuel says he's stuck with the ox, and Rav says Mechal Taos, but here he'd also have the ox. So in this case, it's the ox. So they both end up with the ox. There'd be no difference between the two. So the Gemara says, "Lo tzricha mineh." No, the case is that the seller has money to pay. So there is enough meaning between Rav and Shmuel. Rav Amar raised a mekachtaot. He says, Rav says it's a mekachtaot, a mistaken transaction. We're going to follow the majority. Most people who purchase shvarim, who purchase oxen, purpose it for plowing. So Shmuel says the seller could say, "I sold it to you. I thought it's for shechita, and we're not following the rove." His lean about the ruba be isura. According to Shmuel, we follow the rove when it comes to isure. Of a mamona lo as lean about the ruba. That's the way we do with that. Okay, Who's your questions, comments, thoughts on anything we did so far? All right, let's go further. Now, the Gemara now goes back to the first line of the Gemara when we quoted them. We did the Mishnah with the Shorshan and Ga'akara Parah, and we said that our Mishnah is like Sumpus, but the Chamin Ramakulak with it. So now, Tani Nami Hachi, Shorshan and Ga'akara Parah, Venimsa Ubarabatida, the Bishor Gorda Parah, and we find the fetus on its side. We don't know if it gave birth before it was gored, Yimishnachliyalda, or after it was gored, it gave birth. Shalmechatzinezek. So the Baal HaShor has to pay chatzinezek for the mother cow and a quarter nezek for the blood. Dibrei Sumchus. But Chachamim Omrim Amos Mikor L'Raya. Chachamim say Amos Mikor. So here in the Brayse, it doesn't say Zeklal Gadol, or what did the Gemara say? What was the expression? Zeklal Gadol B'din. Right. The Brayse doesn't say Zeklal Gadol B'din. That was Rav Yudin Shmuel who said that. Okay, now. All right, let me just pause for station identification. The Gemara gave two answers. We said either it's referring to our case that even if the nizak is bari and the mazik is shema, we still say the burden of proof is still on the nizak to prove his case, or it's saying. It's alluding to the case here that even where a person, within the sheets of Shmuel, that if a person sold the ox, and even though the majority, buy it for, plowing purposes, but if money has already exchanged hands, we say most of Olavaraya. All right. Now, let me take a look. So, I said the Bryce doesn't mention it, but Rabbi Yehuda named Shmuel, they quoted it as a Klal Gadol. So he says, why? But then, so again, okay, so it's interesting. So, right, Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel. So Shmuel's making the statements that Klal Gadol, but then makes sense. Shmuel could refer to the way he states the din. Okay, now let me just see what it's doing. All right, now they both have the same story here, so we'll go through the story. This is from the Daf Digest. It's also the Moreh Daf Yomi. A certain Jewish seller of household goods purchased some very expensive dishes and other items that have been imported from Europe. And this is going to be one of these Ben Ish Chai deals, so it's taking place in Baghdad. It's in Baghdad. He says shortly after the purchase, the buyer found out that the original non-Jewish owner had rented these vessels out for use at the wedding of a certain non-Jewish man in Baghdad. After the wedding, the non-Jewish owner repackaged the vessels and sold them to a Jewish merchant, but then passed them off to the retailer in question. And in the, yeah, and right. And the Moreh Daf Yomi, they said they rewrapped it with like grasses, whatever they were doing. So the retailer who had purchased the dishes demanded his money back. These vessels are worthless to me since they are treif and cannot be sold to a Jew. The seller disagreed. It is true they cannot be sold to a Jew, but we never talked about if they were kosher when you bought them. In any case, they're just as valuable whether they are kosher or not. Although it is true that they can never be kashered, they were kli cheres, like earthenware vessels, so they can't be kashered. All you need to do is sell them to a goy. In other words, they're worth what I sold them to you. So you have value. This case came before the Ben Ish Chai Zitzal, who ruled that the money need not be refunded. In Baba Kamam and Vav, we find that Rav and Shmuel argue with the one who sells an ox to his friend and it turns out to be habitually gore, so it must be shefted immediately. Has conducted a valid sale. We hold like Shmuel that if there is no clear proof the ox was purchased for plowing, the seller can claim that the buyer purchased the ox to sheft, since the burden of proof is on the plaintiff. The same holds true in your case, Ben Ish Chai concluded. The dishes have a certain value whether they are kosher or treif. If the buyer wishes to annul the sale, he must prove that he would not have purchased them if he had known they were treif. The burden of proof is on the plaintiff. Now, he has one more thing here in the Moreh Daf Yomi. Wait. He says here, he quotes from the Sefer, Kol Eliyahu. He says that the case in our sugya is not exactly the same as the case with the Kharis. The person who acquires the shore, if he needs it for plowing, the shore is not fit for what he wants to do it. In other words, here, when you're buying the shore, if I want it for plowing and the shore is a Nakhon, I totally cannot use it for plowing purposes. He says, but conversely, when with these dishes, he didn't get anything that was defective. His taina is that that he can't sell it to the kosher people, but he can sell it to the other people. So it's like a weaker argument by the dishes, because he could just as easily sell the dishes to non-Jews. But here, if he's a farmer and he's the ox for plowing, it's totally unfit for what he wants to use it for.
Do, then he's out of luck.
You mean the merchant? If
Correct.
that's it. All right, I know what to say. All right. Any other questions, comments, thoughts? All right, let's see
Okay.
back. All right, let's see back in the Gemara. Everybody with me? Okay, so yeah, we're around 10 lines down on Mem Pavah Beis 46b. So Amar Shmuel Bar Nachmani, where do we know that the burden of proof is on the person who, is the plaintiff? Where do we know that? Shneimar Mibalgrim Yigash Aleihem. This is when Moshe Rabbeinu is going on Har Sinai, and he tells the Arsu says he tells the Zkenim, he says, Aaron and Hur are here. If you have any problems, you go to them. Yigash Aleihem. So he says, Yigash, come to them, but it doesn't say Yavo Aleihem. That's what the Arsu says is Yigash Aleihem. So the Gemara turns out Yigish Raya Aleihem. So if you look at Rashi, it says Baal Devarim is the Toveya. Baal Devarim is the plaintiff. If you have a Din Torah, or you have a din, like a litigation, so you should bring your evidence to them. So Matkav Ravashi, Halam Li Kros. Ravashi says, why do we need a pasuk for that? He says, Svarahu, isn't it logical? Dekayiv Le Ke'eva Azil Be'asya. The person who has a pain, he goes to see the doctor. Meaning, the way the art school had it was, the doctor doesn't prescribe things to people who don't come to him. In other words, you come to him, then he prescribes something to you. So it means, if you have a case, you have to prove your case. So he says, El Elo Kralad Rav Nachman Amar Ravua. So according to Rav Ashi, it sounds like we don't need the pasuk. That pasuk is not coming to prove that the most of Mikhail Abaraya. So what do we need the pasuk for? El Kralad Rav Nachman Amar Ravua. The Amar Rav Nachman Ravua. Yinayin Shin is Kakin El Tovei Tchila. How do we know that when we have a Din Torah, we address first the claim? Let's say there are claims and counterclaims. How do we know that we address the claims first of the plaintiff? He says, Shenemar, Yibalzrim Yigash Aleihem, Yigish Rav Aleihem. Let's look at Rashi on this, on the top line of Rashi. He says, Shenis Kakel and Tovei Tchila, Kigon Reuven Tovei Mishimon Mana Shilvahu. If Reuven is claiming 100 zuz from Shimon, that he loaned him the money, and then in parentheses we have the Edom Obashar, but the Marshal takes it out. The Shimon Mishivo, and Shimon, who's the defendant, responds, Tafasta mishali, Tafasta. You see some of my property, so I want you to give me back my property. Oh, mashkona yabiyadcha, that, or I gave you mashkon, and then you damaged the mashkon. In other words, so I'm going to give you money, but I want to set off for the damage you did the mashkon. I gave you like this heirloom, what's that watch that you all do? The no, the Rolex is also, but what is it that you pass it generation to generation? It'll come to me. Anyway, but you get the idea. I gave you this watch, and you damaged the watch, whatever. He says, so first we address Shimon's claims, and we make Shimon pay the money, he says. Then we address Shimon's claims, and do not debar its feast of Bamashkon, to address the property that was seized or the mashkon that was damaged. Now, Tosos takes it up. What exactly is this case? Tosos says. So Tosos says that it's talking about a case where the defendant, if you look in Tosos, it's the Tosos Shein is Kakel, Tobeya Tchila, 10 lines above where it gets wide. So the first word in line is Vim Tomar. Vim Tomar Hechidami. Shimon Toshim Mishlo, Nimlo Shuzman Beitin. In other words, this is like this. What is the case? If Shimon says, I need time to get evidence, like to prove my case, so if he asks for up to 30 days, we must not give it to him because we give 30 days to pay you off debts. And if Shimon says, I'll bring the Edom after 30 days, below lo, then we wouldn't pay attention to that. But filu zila nichse, the atu imamar shlechar shana, shnatayim yibi Edom, nishomim leklal. who we're not going to listen to him in Psalm 130 days. Yishol Ploni Ploni Bishat Yodim Shu So it's where Shimon says, "I have Edom," and we know the Edom, and he says the Edom were present when we did the underlying transaction, and we believe him. So I would think we would give Shimon, the defendant, more than 30 days to get his evidence together. So Kamashmalan not. We're addressing the first case of Reuven, and then we're extracting money from Shimon, and then Shimon's case then we have to hear later on. That's the way Tosis takes it. Now let's do a few more lines, and we'll pause. He says, so Amri Neher Doi, four lines above where it gets wide in the Gemara. Amri Neher Doi, the Neherdians, this came from Neher Doi, say, Pamim Shes Katim. Sometimes we'd be involved with the defendant first. He says, Vehechidami, what would be the case that we would address ourselves to the Beis Din would, the tainus of the defendant first, the Kazili Nichse, where the value of the property is going down? So what's the case? Let's look at Rashi, the third narrow line. Because Zilinich saying, "Sheishkan tagarim sheknuhu b'damim yikarim u'machar yilchulahem." In other words, let's say he says, he seized my property or he damaged my mashkon, and he wants to sell this property to merchants that are passing around, and the pertinent merchants aren't going to hang around, so he can make he the defendant. Once this thing is resolved with his counterclaim, he could sell that property to these merchants and make a lot of money.
What's the status?
No, not necessarily a claim. In other words, he says Reuven seized his property. He could say merchandise. Or Reuven, he gave Reuven some mashkon, and Reuven damaged the mashkon. So he wants to litigate that issue, and he wants to then take the item that Reuven has and sell it to these merchants that are passing by, and he can make a lot of money on it. And if we have to litigate this a month or two from now, I'm not going to be able to make the money because they're going to be gone. That's Rashi's first pshat. He says, Inami, or in the alternative, Rashi says, Shekarko tav zalot, or Shimon, the defendant, has karka and he wants to sell the karka, but nobody wants to pay a lot of money for it because they think Shimon is like desperate for money. In other words, Shimon is desperate for money as a result of this whole litigation. So, in other words, when I see somebody who's desperate for money, I don't want to pay so much money for the karka. In other words, it was like, if the seller doesn't have to sell, then they pay more money. But if the seller is like, he's desperate, then that's it. In Yotzilo, Tfisato, Omashkono, Yimkrei, Vishon, But the if we can resolve his this other matter with the litigation, maybe he'll pay the guy from whatever the proceeds of this of the property that he has, whatever. We can work that a counterclaim out, so then he'll be able to sell his real property to these other people without suffering a loss. So the thing is, so Zilinich says, so it means either the merchants are passing around and it means and he won't be able to get the money later on for the same price, or people want to buy his karka, or he wants to sell some karka, but they don't want to offer a lot of money because it looks like he's desperate. If we can work out his counterclaim ahead of time, then he'll be able to get more money. Okay, then we okay, whose questions comes to us? Anything we did so far? Everybody good? Yeah, so the,
Logic.
it sounds like logic. So somebody said to me today, this is Roey Hertzfeld, he's in the Beis Midrash. He says that there's a Pnei Yehoshua. He says he quoted what's the fellow Rav Shruli, what gives one of the Daf Yomi Shiurim, what's his name? Rav Shruli Borenstein, yeah. He's quoted Rav Shruli Borenstein. He says this is the Pnei Yehoshua Yadua, the well-known Pnei Yehoshua. Pnei Yehoshua says, even though the Gemara sounds like that it's Svara in the end of the Gemara, Pnei Yehoshua says, well, really, it's the Pasuk. That whether we go like the din of the Pasuk. I'm a, yeah, but so the Pnei Yehoshua says, really, he'll leave it for the Pasuk. I don't know about the other thing, but that's what he says. Okay, let's do the next piece of Gemara, then we got to wrap it up. Okay? Everybody good in Zoom world? Any questions in Zoom world? Okay. All right, good. All right, let's see further. All right, let's see. So, we're two lines above where it gets wide, then hammer days, on bubble days rather. So okay, became parish. So the second part of the Mishnah was with the cow gores the shore, and let's just say this outside again. So the cow gores the shore, and then the cow gives birth. If the cow gave birth after it gored, so then both the vlad and the cow would be subject to collection from the injured party. But if it gave birth before Gor, then the vlad is out of the picture. The vlad is out of the picture. All right, so the Gemara is going to have one shot and then go to the different shot, okay? So he says, V'chein parashna tadashur v'chulei. So chatzi nezek, he says, Ravi nezek, ha'ganizku d'bay shlomei, kuli nizka n'chei riva maya b'nitei. So the Gemara assumes in the Havamina, we said that the damaged party can get chatzi nezek from the para and Ravi nezek from the vlad. So half and a quarter is three quarters. So the Gemara assumes he can recoup three quarters of his injury. That's what the Gemara assumes. So he says, so how could that be the case? He says, why should he be able to recoup three quarters? He's only entitled to the half the damage. So Amar Abaye, Chatzi Nezek, Echad Miarba, Benezek. So Abaye says, when the Mishnah says Chatzi Nezek, it means half of what he would normally be able to recoup. So normally he'd be able to recoup one half. So now he can get one quarter. So when it says chatzi nezek, he's getting one quarter from the mother. That's the way Abaye thinks. One quarter from the mother. Right. And he says, revi'a nezek, when it says revi'a nezek, it means a quarter of the nezek. It means a quarter from what he would normally be able to collect. So normally from the vlad, he could collect, it would be the chatzi nezek, he's going to collect from the vlad one eighth. He says, Rabbi nezek, echad mishmona benezek. Now, he's saying like this. Right. In other words, the way he's viewing it, it's like you have sort of like two tortfeasers. You have the mother and the calf, and they're both causing damage. The mother definitely causing damage, and the calf may be causing damage. The calf was part of the mother. So as we view, the Gemara is going to explain that they're owned by different people. They're owned by different people. All right, that's it. You see, look at that. When we wait, everything comes up. They're owned by different people. So what are the rights and remedies of the parties? So the Gemara wants to say, the way Abaye is understanding the Mishnah, that the damaged party, the plaintiff, he can collect one quarter of the damages from the mother cow. That's, in other words, one half of the damages, he's entitled to the chatzi nezek. Let's say his shore was damaged $1,000. So he can collect 500. So of the 500, he can collect 250 from the mother. Now, he should logically be able to collect 250 from the vlad. But the vlad is besafik. We don't know if it's there or not. So he's only going to get half of the quarter, of half of the quarter, which is 1/8 from the vlad. Okay, wait. Let's hold off the questions. Okay, there's 1/8 from the vlad. Okay, let's put it back in the Gemara. So he says, so Amar by chasin zek chamir baben ezek, v'din ezek chamishmon ben ezek. The iparu vlad the chadinu. If the mother cow and the offspring belong to the same person, so then the injured party could say to the owner of the para, in other words, I need my chasi nezek, give it to me. You own, everybody's got done with this. So the case that the way Abaye understands the Mishnah, the para and the vlad are owned by two different people. So how could this be? Let's look at Rashi. He says, where is it? He says, Right. Okay, 6 lines from the bottom. The part of the chad of the chad, Moshamachalo para chutzmi ubara. Now, I can't sell the ubar, this is a davar shel baliolam, but I could sell the cow. In other words, I own the cow and it's private right now. I could sell you the cow right now, except for the ubar. So I retain ownership in the ubar and you own the cow. So we have two people, one owns the cow, one owns the ubar. So let's see back in the Gemara. El on the third white line, El Lotzrich the par the chad of la dechad, the dekadim tavi the baal para tchila. So if the plaintiff first sues the baal para, hakanami damar le the baal para, paridach aziktan habli raya didlach shutve. So if he purchased the baal para, he could say, your para is the one that gored my ox. So give me proof that there's a contributor, that the other person is contributing to it. So that can, in other words, the burden would be on you to prove that the Vlad was part of the mother cow at the time and did the damages. Otherwise, I'm looking at the Chassid as a commune. Ela, the Gemara says, the Kadim Tavi Labal Vlad Chila. So the Gemara says, the way Abayan says the Mishnah, that the plaintiff approached the owner of the Vlad first. He says, the Amar Lei, so then the owner, the Para, says to the plaintiff, Gilita Daitech to Shifa Idli. In other words, you've implicitly acknowledged that the Vlad was involved, liable for some of my, by suing the owner of the Vlad, you're implicitly conceding that some of the damage was done by the Vlad, or it was, the Vlad is responsible for it. So that's the case in the Mishnah, according to Abaye. The way Abaye understands it, that Chatzi Nezek and Revi Nezek, Chatzi Nezek really means a quarter of the Nezek, that's from the mother, and then Revi Nezek, he's really going to get an eighth of the Nezek from the Vlad. So he's not going to get his whole Chatzi Nezek, but he'll get three-eighths of his damages. That's what we think. Now, he says, Ika da Amri, someone to say, Afagab the Kadim Tavi the Baal Parat Chila, someone to say that even if the owner of the injured chore sues the Baal Parah first, Matsi Madchile, he, the Baal Parah, could still like defer him to like part of liability to the owner of the Vlad. The Amarle, that he, the owner of the Parah, could say, made a Yadi the Shutla Idli. I know that the other one has to contribute. So he could also make that argument. That's what he's saying. Now, in other words, I know that I know, in other words, I own the para, but I know that the owner of the Vlad is also partially responsible for these damages. He could say that. So the Gemara is here, in this Ukimta, the Gemara isn't saying that. Here the Gemara is saying that he could absolutely, as a matter of halacha, say that. He says, so he's only going to give him like the quarter. Okay, now let's just do further on the Gemara, and then we'll wrap it up tonight. Okay, let's focus. Three lines from the bottom. So that's what Abaye says. So Amar Rava, Atu Echami or Rabban Ezek Echamishmon Ben Ezek Katani. It's nice. You have a whole little shtickle Torah, but does the Mishnah say, you know, one quarter? Does the Mishnah say 1/8? He says Katzi Ezek Ravin Ezek Katani. The Mishnah says 1/2 and 1/4. El Amar Rava, rather Rava says the pshat is Yolam Bepara Uvlad Dechad. That no, the same person owns the para and he owns the vlad. Bahaki Kaimrina. This is what the Talmud Mishnah is teaching me. Eat of the para, Mishtam Chatzin Nezek Mipara. If the para is around, so then he'll get Chatzin Nezek from the para. He says late to the para. If the para is not around, Mishtam Ravi Nezek Miblad. Then he can recoup a quarter of the Nezek from the blood. He says. Why Tama Vloyadina and Yhava Vlad Bahada Kinaka Ilohava? Because we don't know whether the Vlad was part of the mother cow at the time that it gored or not. Aval, Ipshitlan to have a Vlad Bahada, if we would know for a certainty that the Vlad was part of the mother cow, it's not a gored, Kinaka have a Vlad Bahada Kinaka, Ishtan Kuli Chasinezim Vlad. We even get the whole Chasinezim from the Vlad. Okay, Rabba Latame, Rabba Paulus is Shita, Dama Rava. Para Shezika Gova Mivlada, that if a para causes injury, you can even collect from the offspring. He says, my tama, gufahi, that's considered to be guf, that's part of the body that did the damage. He says, it's like, you know, you ubar yerachimo, and ubar is yerachimo. So just like I can collect mi gufo from the guf of the mother, I can collect from the ubar as well. Let's take a look at Rashi, the second wide line of Rashi. Barabbas Firulei the Chad Gufahu. It's like one of the Ivarim of the mother cow. Okay, let's take a look further back Gemara. Now, Tarnagolet, Shezika, but if a hen does injury, he says, you can't collect from the beta, from the egg. In other words, you can also tie it to Chatzinezek, but you can't collect from the egg that she lays later on. Maintaima Pirsha Ba'almahu. That's something separate. Pirsha, look at Rashi, the second narrow line. Pirsha Davar Mufrash Nena. In other words, the egg, in other words, the ubar is viewed as being part of the mother. That's part of the gufo. The egg is not viewed as being part of the mother. And so you can't collect from egg. I think Simchas works easier with this, okay? All right. Now.
The
In other words, you collect the gufo of the animal that did it. You get gufo, so the gufo, this is part of the gufo, it's like part of the environment. Right. Okay. Now, all right, now let's take a look here. Okay, now one little piece and that'll be it. Okay. This is from the Daf Yomi Digest. The Chafetz Chaim writes about an employer's obligation to pay his employee in a timely fashion, so he should not violate the prohibition against delaying payment of an employee, Baal Talim. One case that he discusses, an employer who did not have the funds to pay his employee when he asked for payment, but came upon additional funds before the day was over. Although he had previously told the employee he did not have the funds to pay him, he's now obligated to bring the money to the employee or at least inform him that he could come and get his money. Chafetz Chaim explains that in order for the employer to avoid violating the prohibition against late payment of his employee's wages, he's not required to do any more than inform the employee that his wages are available. Once he does so, in other words, he's on this issue, like the person who experiences pain goes to the doctor. He says, right, so he says once he does so, he will not violate the prohibition, even if the employee does not come to pick up the money. This really is based on the assumption that an employer is not obligated to pursue his employee in order to pay him in a timely fashion. Rather, the employee has responsibility to pursue his employer. Moreover, even if he pursued him once and he was told there were no funds available to pay his employee, nevertheless, once the employer informs him his wages are now available, it is up to the employee to get to his money. Proof of this assertion can be found in our argument that relates, you know, the kayv le ke'eva as el be'asya. The one who experiences pain should go to the doctor. In other words, the employee who is seeking payment has the burden of pursuing his employer in order to receive his wages. Language of the verse also indicates its principle. Since the verse expresses concern about a case where the employee will detain the money instead of making a timely payment, but it does not obligate the employer to pursue the employee in order to pay him his wages. Okay, that's going to be tonight. Let me finish the recording. One second.